C6, number 20B.
Far in advance of that age, because already then she was beginning to speak about the psychology of spirit, and no more about the psychology of the psyche. She uses that term as the psychology of spirit because she could see that even psychology, though it was at that time a very new subject, was already antiquated and must therefore be overformed to the psychology of spirit. Now, only today, little by little, in the field of psychology, they begin to realize, actually, that there must be such a thing as a psychology of spirit, and not just the psychology of the soul or of the psyche. And parallel to this goes another development, which only now is being acknowledged here and there in the psychological field, namely that we have not to do with the trinity of spirit, soul, and body. This was accepted for quite a long time, or is even today more or less the basis of psychology, that we have to deal on an equal level with the spiritual and with the psychological and with the body, so that spirit, soul, and body are the trinity that make up man. But Mrs. Eddy already saw that this is not true. In the psychology of spirit, we don't have that trinity, but we have the hierarchy of spirit, soul, body. And actually, in this way, she brought the linear concept into a vertical concept, into a hierarchical concept, showing, yes, there is a body, and the body is affected by the soul or the psyche, by mental and psychical traits. These can affect the body, but and this was her great contribution. She could see the psychology of spirit, namely that the psyche was governed by spirit, so that spirit was of a much higher hierarchy than the soul, and the soul was higher than the body. So you had a vertical concept, and no more a trinity where each one had an equal value. Now, today, little by little, in the various modern psychology, psychological theories, theories on psychology, we have indications that there must be a realm which is above the psychological realm, and that may be the logos or the spirit or whatever term they use. Think of that whole question of psychology in Mrs. Eddy's time, and perhaps up to recently. They all try to investigate the consciousness, try to classify consciousness as consciousness, subconsciousness, unconsciousness, collective unconsciousness, archetypal consciousness, as universal consciousness, as cosmic consciousness, still all meaning mortal consciousness. But she already saw something very different. She could see that all that could be just put into one, can you say, into one pot, into one basket, into one sack, and say, that's all mortal mind. What she introduced was that which was above that kind of consciousness, the supra-consciousness. And only today you begin to hear here and there, either from the side of psychology or of anthropology, or even from the side of physics, that there must be a supra-consciousness a consciousness independent of the human consciousness, and that supra-consciousness would be rather the real consciousness than all the rest of it. So again, in this way, we can see that Mrs. Eddy was far in advance of the paradigm of her time, and far in advance of the paradigm even of our time. If you think that she was already showing that the supra-consciousness is a consciousness of ideas, and that therefore human consciousness has to give way to the consciousness of ideas, then we see how far in advance she was to her age. How far in advance she was. It's true that back in history, starting with Plato, people were already talking about idea, and they already were talking about that matter is just a shadow world, and Plato was introducing the term idea. We know that Leibniz tried to find a whole theory about these root notions of reality. He called them not ideas, because he wanted to have a new term. He called them nomads. Nomads, is that right? Okay, nomads, yes. But only recently, it was actually Heisenberg, a physicist, who began to see that we must have a completely different concept of idea, because up to that time they had a substantialistic concept of idea. An idea was a something, was an identity. Whereas idea is a whole structure. We cannot have an idea as a something, as a substantialistic sense. We must have it as a structural sense, because we have seen an idea is only then an idea when it reflects all other ideas, or else it is not an idea. And therefore, idea is a whole structure. Now, Heisenberg has brought that out recently, and therefore has introduced the proposition of a meta-thought, just as you have metaphysics, that we should have a meta-thought, that thought should be transcended to idea, to structure of idea. He asked for a meta-philosophy. Therefore, you can see that whole trend of transforming and overforming the thought into idea, the structure of thought into a structure of idea, is really showing that which Mrs. Eddy has done 100 years ago. Not only has she transcended thought to the point of idea, but by doing that she has done something which only today the philosophers of science begin to realize, namely that it is not the scientist that makes the science, but that it is the divine idea, or science itself, that makes a scientist. She just turned the whole thing upside down and began to realize that all what is going on as invention and rapid progress in the world, in technology, that is not the effect and the outcome of thinkers, but that the idea, the spiritual idea, is the origin of all that goes on in the world. That is the idea that makes the philosopher think. It is the idea that makes the scientist to discover, and not the other way around. Well, all this is beginning to be recognized here and there, and one can read it in the various literature of today, that they begin to see that the supra-consciousness, the consciousness of idea, is actually the origin, the cause of all those lower effects which we had thought were the product of intelligent thinking of thinking in according to reason and according to cause and effect. I think another great anomaly that Mrs. Eddy saw at her time, and which really brought a terrific transformation, is that up to that time nobody was thinking that that it would be possible to have a science of life. Life was just something that happened. Man can't produce life, therefore the old scientists of the 19th century and even of the 20th century took life and the evolution of life as something that just had to be accepted, but there was never a science of life. Even today, they are trying to find out what is the science of life. What makes life life? Is it the hen or the egg that makes life life? You know, this is not yet resolved properly. And therefore, as you know, perhaps from one of the articles you had in Ideas of Today from Eva Maria Bauer, where she shows that the great questions that the world ever had since the time of the French Dubois-Raymond, where he said there are seven great enigmas in being, just as Dunuy said it, there are seven great stages which cannot be explained by science, which Mrs. Eddy takes as the main point of her discovery, namely the days of creation, and shows what the science of life is. She gives the answer why these mutations in evolution have taken place. Up to now, biology and anthropology and paleontology, they all somehow see that there are breaks in the evolution of man which cannot be explained by science, but they can only describe that they happened. So up to now, what was being investigated in the way of life was a descriptive science. They only could describe the various periods and could describe that they happened, whereas Mrs. Eddy came and said, this is my big thing, that I explain you why it happened. I give you the signs of life, and I tell you why it happens. It happens because in being there is mind, capital M, and so there was a first cause. And there is spirit, and therefore there is evolution, and there are mutations. And so she goes on and says, because there is spirit, you always had this great sense of always finding higher and higher identities in the evolution. And so she goes on, you know that from my little book on Dunuy, A New Theory of Evolution, where I showed that actually Mrs. Eddy explains exactly those points which the natural scientists cannot explain. Well, this is a new paradigm. And even today they can't yet explain it. But Mrs. Eddy explained it. And to say that therefore she was a scientist of the last century, therefore a scientist of that century which believed in Darwin, is really saying a bit too much. Because she was actually a scientist of the 20th, if not of the 21st century. That we don't know yet. But at least we know that she was a scientist that has anticipated the concept of science of our age in which we live today, right now. One of the enormous contributions that Mrs. Eddy made, and I think which still most students of Christian Science just don't acknowledge or just can't see, and if they see, they don't see the importance of it. They just take it for granted, say, yes, yes, naturally, that's wonderful, because they take it as a religious revelation, instead of a terrific scientific achievement, namely this, that up to Mrs. Eddy, no philosopher, no school of philosophy was ever able to reduce the infinite phenomena of our universe to categories that were workable. They always tried to categorize the infinite phenomena into certain categories. Right back, say, from Aristotle, as he began it already, then every school of philosophy took that up again. You had Kant that tried it again. Then in our age, Hartmann, he was just much nearer to what we see, because he was the first one, you see, who gave a clue how to categorize. Namely, he could already see that one had not just to make classifications, but also levels, in categories of levels, in order to explain all the phenomena. Now, what does it mean? It means the following thing. It means no subject in the world can be understood scientifically without that subject is first broken down in categories. Without that, no subject is understandable. Because that's the very essence of a science, that the science says, what is science? That I can take the infinite phenomena and put order into these phenomena. Because only when we see orders, we can understand it. Before we don't see order, our capacity to understand is too small. We cannot understand. In order to understand the order of the infinite as infinity, we would have to be bigger than the infinite. If we are not bigger than the infinite, there is only one way, and that is to break down the infinite phenomena into categories. Now, if you read what philosophy says about these categories, you feel that they are really at loss to find the categories of being, which to them are the most important categories. They say, yes, we can find categories in every specified field of science that we can, but only a few categories of each specific science will overlap with another science, and therefore we cannot see the congruency of these categories. And they also say that that it is not possible yet to represent the categories of being in categories of understanding. What's the use of having categories of being if we can't understand it? And so they come to the conclusion, really, that the structures of the categories of being can only be guessed at the moment. What did Mrs. Eddy do? She says that she gives us those categories of being. And we have them through the revelations of John Dorley, if I may call it that way, that he revealed in the textbook what the categories are. Without those categories, we couldn't talk to each other really properly scientifically. What would happen to Christian Science if one wouldn't have seen those categories? Exactly what happened in the movement. That goes down and down, becomes flatter and flatter and flatter. That's all. Because an intelligent understanding and an intelligent communication on that subject is only possible if we can break down the infinite to categories, that's the first thing, and second, to see the interrelation of these categories. Then the infinite can be grasped. This is terrific. No religion has done that. You can't take any religion. What they do is that they explain 1,000 and 2,000 and 10,000 of specific, nice, moral or spiritual truths that they can. It's atomism. They can write wonderful books, all books, where they just bring one aphorism next to the next nice aphorism. But none of these books have categories that are so fundamental that they cover every aspect of being. Every aspect of being. Not just one nice aspect. So I stand in awe before this very fact. This interests me much more than most of all the other metaphysical questions. I just stand in awe always. I just feel this is really worship, this is really adoration. To stand and think that in our age something has happened of that magnitude that says for the first time in the history of mankind, the infinite one can now be reduced to categories and brought into a system so that everyone not only can understand it, but also can calculate with it and thought accept the divine infinite calculus. And calculate with it means actually practice it, applying it, using it, whatever we want. That's then the applied science. But the most important thing is that terrific revelation of bringing really the infinite down to a few great categories. And so we know that really the divine system of reference, as we call it, constituting really the interrelationship of the great three categories of which we are talking all the time, and showing the divine infinite calculus, is something that is far in advance of the age. The 19th century never was dreaming about such a thing. So Mrs. Eddy is the scientist of the last century. Even today, she presents a scientific aspect of science that is far in advance even of our age. And with this new categorization of being, at the same time, she had to give us a new language. Absolutely new language. Every science, naturally, that comes into existence, whenever there is a new science, they form new terms. Usually they take a Greek term or a Greek root or a Latin root and make new terms in order to express the ideas in a new terminology. And Mrs. Eddy had to do the same. She had to use a completely new language, which we superficially call, because it's understandable, which we call the language of the capitalized terms, but actually it's a much different language. It's actually the language of spiritual tonality. That's the language we speak. It's the language of spiritual tonality of these capitalized terms. If we know the capitalized terms, it doesn't do a trick just by knowing them. Every child can learn them in 5 minutes. That's no difficulty. But to get the language of the capitalized terms, that takes longer. That takes years and years and years of learning that language. And I've never seen anybody who has not to have to take years and years. And we know today only too well that some have taken 20 years and have not heard that language, that they are still with the capitalized term as words. It's a language that sounds, a language that you can listen to, a language that you can look at. You can see the beauty of that language. You hear the music of that language without a word being spoken. It's a completely new language, the new tongue of which the Bible was speaking and said, they will speak in a new tongue. It's the tonality tongue of the Spirit. And in this way, you can see that Mrs. Eddy was a great renovator, that she not only had to show the categories, but at the same time give a new language. And that language is not English, it's not German. That language is not expressed in symbols of words, not even in symbols of words. That language is tone, spiritual tone. And you hear mind, you can see mind, you can feel mind, all that. It's a new language, and we better learn it. And we better learn it, or else what we do, we build a whole system on these capitalized terms, and it's just a structure of words put together, and we get into combinatoric and into the wild thinking that is then possible. So here we can see again the extraordinary scientist of Mrs. Eddy.